Chapter 2. Property Analysis. I am very much a big picture person. I believe that if you need a calculator, it is probably not a deal. After all, I am the visionary and not the integrator. If you have to run all sorts of numbers to figure out if it's a deal, it probably isn't. But if instead somebody can run numbers by you in a conversation, hey, I have a house with an after-repaired value of $100,000. It needs 10 grand in work, and you can pick it up for $50,000. Now, what kind of numbers do you need to run on that? That is a deal, right? As long as you can verify everything that person just told you. So, if you need a calculator, it is probably not a deal. The other thing is, if you have to ask someone if it's a deal, it probably is not a deal either. I get people asking me all the time, hey, what do you think about this deal? Well, unfortunately, it usually is not a deal, or they would know it, right? Having said this, remember that most deals are made and not found. Meaning that when I found it, it wasn't a deal, and it didn't become a deal until after the negotiation process. You want to hit home runs, especially on your first few deals, because you need to make sure the deal has plenty of profit in it. The worst thing you can do is get involved in a marginal deal and get discouraged and get out of the business before you really get started. I want you to get used to running the numbers and making the offer before you get off the phone on your first call. Sure, it's going to feel odd at first without ever having seen the property, but after you do it a few times, it will become second nature. Remember that the goal is to get your offer to them and start the negotiation process. Now, if you are just starting, I still want you to go see the property before closing on them if you can. Eventually, you will be able to complete the entire transaction without ever looking at the property, just like we do, and many of my students do. We do all our business by phone, email, and internet. That doesn't mean that someone in our office or someone we hire that is local to the property doesn't go look at it. If it is a for sale by owner, you will probably either go meet the seller at the house or have someone else meet the seller. This can be your boots on the ground person, or it can be you, especially if you are just starting out. We have bought many houses over the phone, and this is how we buy pretty much all of our houses. However, you increase your chances of getting a deal if you go to the house and meet the seller. Property search criteria. Before I can make an offer on a property, I need the answers to two, sometimes three, questions. 1. After repaired value. A lot of people ask me, well, what is the current value? Or they tell me a house has a current value of X. That does not mean anything. It makes no difference whatsoever what the current value of the property is, or what it will appraise for in its as-is condition, if it needs work. We are not basing value on as-is. We are basing the value on after-repaired value, or ARV, as you will often see. So, the first thing I need to know is what is the after-repaired value? 2. Amount of repairs. What is it going to cost to fix up this property? You are likely to get a little bit of resistance to this question, especially on the phone and especially with realtors, because they do not want to make a commitment to a figure. One of the phrases that I use a lot, especially with realtors, is just a ballpark. Give me just a ballpark. What do you think it is going to cost to fix it up? You need to be able to estimate repairs while on the phone so you have an idea of what you can pay for a property. You can go room by room, asking what work needs to be done, or you can use the per square foot estimate. We'll cover this in a later chapter. 3. Potential rent. If this is a rental property, I will need to know what kind of cash flow it is going to have to make sure the numbers will work at the total cost my buyer will have in the property. If it is a for sale by owner, I will also need to know their loan balance, if they are current on their payments, or how far behind they are. I usually ask, how far behind are you on your payments? That way they are not as embarrassed to tell me if they're behind, since I assumed they already are. This is all in the FSBO script in the course. Now you are probably thinking that the seller or realtor does not know this information or will not tell you, but don't worry, I will show you in the section on negotiating exactly how to ask these questions and get your offer to them before you get off the phone. I will also show you how to make low offers and not have them hang up on you or laugh at you as they may have in the past. How I run my numbers. Now, let's look at the way I run numbers and determine whether a deal is a deal. In my market, we have to be able to wholesale houses at 70% of appraised value. This may be different for your market, depending on market conditions, price range of the property, and what investors are willing to pay in your area. The 70% includes purchase, repairs, and closing costs, so I basically have to be able to buy the property at 60% or 65%, or sometimes even less. When running your numbers, you always want to use worst-case scenarios. For example, if your seller tells you that the house is worth $80,000 to $85,000, use the $80,000 number. You will also pull your own comps so you can tell them what it is actually worth. If they tell you it needs $10,000 to $15,000 in work, use $15,000. You can also use a per square foot price as well to get a ballpark. More about this method later. How to analyze a deal fast. I used to use an analyzer when making offers. It was really fast, but we do not use it anymore. Analyzing a deal is very simple once you have the two or three pieces of information you need to make an offer, as previously mentioned. 1. The ARV, or after-repaired value. 2. The cost of repairs. 3. The rents, if it is a rental property. Once you have these numbers, the rest is easy. Now let's look at a deal. If the after-repaired value is $100,000, I am going to take $100,000 times 0.7, and that gives me $70,000. That is what my investor buyer will have in the property after all of the cost added back in. Then, I am going to subtract what they told me the house needs in work, say $15,000. That leaves $55,000. Now, I need to subtract out what I want to make on the property as day trader. If I want to make $5,000, I cannot pay any more than $50,000. If I am buying a listed property where I have to physically close and pay closing costs, I can also subtract closing costs. So my $5,000 will be my net, not my gross. So, say I subtract $1,500 in closing costs. Now I can pay no more than $48,500. I am probably going to offer around $44,780. I always want to use an odd number, and the reason I do that is this is because it lets the seller know that I have done my homework and I have figured it all the way down to the dollar. If I say $38,000 or $40,000, then they think I am just throwing a number out. I always want them to think that I have done my homework. Day trading luxury homes. I want to talk about luxury homes for a minute as I get a lot of inquiries about day trading them. Whether a home is a luxury home will vary depending on the area. In Orange County, California, where the median-priced home is almost $800,000, a home would have to have a price of at least several million dollars to be classified as a luxury home, in my opinion. In my area, the median home price is in the $200,000 range, so a luxury home would be anything around $1 million. Many investors, especially new investors, call me or email me with a luxury home that they have found and are real excited about because they think it is a real good deal. For example, I had someone recently email me a deal that was worth $1 million, and they could buy it for $800,000. Even though it looks like there is $200,000 in equity, I want you to realize that with luxury homes, you must buy them at a larger discount simply because the values of a luxury home can vary so much. I have seen the value from appraisal to appraisal change as much as 20%. In the example I just mentioned, there goes all of the profit. My solution to this, which I learned from luxury home expert Frank McKinney, is that you need to be able to buy a luxury home at no more than 50% of its value to make a good day trading profit on it. This is because there is less of a market for luxury homes, making them harder to sell. And because of this, they can vary in price quite a bit. Keep this in mind and don't get too excited when you can get a luxury home at a 20 or 30% discount to day trade. That's a good place to start, but you need a better deal than that. Just remember, luxury home values can change fast and there are fewer buyers for them. Ideal houses for day trading. Over the years, I have found that the ideal price range for day trading houses is below the median price in a specific area. For example, if the median price is $200,000, then I would want to work in the price range under that, maybe around $150,000 or less. In fact, after years of day trading houses, I have found the houses that sell the fastest for me are the ones that I can price at $50,000 or less. I have found this to be true in just about all markets. Think about it. There are many more people that have $50,000 cash than there are that have $150,000. I would suggest you focus on the houses that are valued as an after-repaired value of $100,000 or less. This way, you can buy them cheap enough that you can keep your price around the $50,000 range. Don't get me wrong, I have day traded many houses much higher than that. In fact, I have day traded houses priced at over $750,000 before. And I continue to day trade higher priced houses. All I am saying is the cheaper ones sell faster because more people can afford them. When to pick a virtual market? Should I stay or should I go? If you live in an area where it is conducive to wholesaling with little resistance, stay in your own market. You will have an advantage of knowing the areas, streets, and neighborhoods, and you will also have many connections right where you live. You will also be able to meet with buyers and sellers versus having to do everything via phone or finding someone in the local area to assist you, aka boots on the ground. When should I go virtual? If your market has a high cost of acquisition, consider another market. This is usually the case in highly competitive markets that experience an upward trend in pricing. This is also the case in markets where the price point on properties is quite high. An example of this is many West Coast markets. You can make a lot of money on a deal, but you have to spend a lot of money to make money. If you don't have the financial ability to sustain a large budget, you'll struggle. In these markets, it also helps if you have multiple strategies outside of wholesaling, such as rehabbing, so you can extract maximum profit from every deal you find. A few factors to consider. Is the market in a non-disclosure state? If you're in one of these markets, such as Texas, you'll have a hard time getting comps on properties unless you have MLS access. Do you have resources in that market? For example, do you know other investors that are buying, agents that can assist you, or other business contacts, such as those that can be your boots on the ground? Will time zone be an issue? If you're in California and are choosing a market on the East Coast or vice versa, be mindful of the time difference since you may need to reach people after working hours. What are the different types of markets? You have two types of markets, cash flow markets and fix and flip markets. A cash flow market is one where the majority of the investor properties are purchased with the intent of holding them for long-term appreciation and steady rental income. Most of the properties in these markets are generally lower end, typically sold from $10,000 to $30,000. You will do more volume in these markets, but the assignment fees may be smaller. I personally like the low-priced markets. They are less intimidating to new investors. So this is good for you if you are intimidated and good for your potential buyers. Also, more people have $30,000 cash than have $300,000 cash. The second type of market is strictly a fix-and-flip market, where the majority of properties do not cash flow. An example of this is California, where most of the price points are high, but rents are low. I personally do not sell many fix-and-flip houses. Most of my sales are rentals or are purchased by owner-occupants. Sometimes you have a hybrid market, typically the large metro markets, where you have a mix of higher-priced and lower-priced deals. Miami and South Florida is an example of this hybrid market. Another thing to consider is going just outside of major MSAs, metropolitan statistical areas, to market. This is what I do. I have the benefit of having a buyer pool from the major MSA, but by going outside one or two counties, I face much less competition. How to pick a virtual market? The only reason to pick a virtual market is to find a market that's easier to work in than where you live. Following are some key things that will help you find a market that will give you the least amount of resistance when trying to buy houses at low prices. Do not get caught up in paralysis of analysis. These are just to help. Look at home sales and prices. CityData.com. This will give you an idea of what prices homes are selling for. It helps to find an MSA with a population of more than 1 million. This is not a hard and fast rule, but a larger population will have more buyers. Google population by MSA and look for flat or moderate appreciation, not high appreciation like you would find in areas like California, Arizona, Nevada, etc. It is easier to sell cheap houses than it is expensive houses. So if you look in areas with low prices, you will find a lot of fix-and-flip investors and landlords. Older cities mean more aging inventory, which means more discounted properties that need updating. Check the amount of inventory at Realtor.com. Find the amount of investor transactions at ListSource.com. Find unemployment information at BLS.gov. Find local rent information at Zillow.com/local-info. Lower rents mean lower priced properties are available. You can find the percentage of renters at census.gov. The more renters, the more low priced homes there will be. How to research virtual markets and inventory. In addition to knowing how to pick a market, it is also important that you know your market and inventory, which is important for being able to spot real deals, make good offers, and operate quickly. There is the national real estate market, but every area has its own local property market and economy, which can be quite different. Anytime you go into a new area to look for deals, you want to know what is going on. So, what should you be looking for? How do you do it? Supply of inventory. A healthy and balanced market has 6 months of supply available. For example, if a small town sees an average of 100 properties selling per month, 600 listings for sale would be a healthy and balanced amount. Nationally, in a good year, we see around 5 million homes changing hands. There can be some quirks in these numbers, such as a new development or several coming online with a few hundred units all at once. Markets have seasonal fluctuations. In traditional markets, fewer properties may be on the market after the summer peak buying season, but more build up in fall, winter, and spring. Sometimes special circumstances affect inventory, such as a recent hurricane or major wildfire, interest rate increase, or a new tax rule change that spurs more people to try to sell ahead of a deadline. Average days on market. Days on market, or DOM, is one of the key ways to tell how healthy a market is. The average DOM tells you how quickly properties are moving. If it is just 30 or 60 days, things are moving very fast. Over 180 days may suggest a recessionary period. Knowing how many days a specific property has been on the market is very helpful for investors, too. If it has been on the market for one day, it is still hot and fresh. If it has been months, the seller and agent may be more motivated, and it could soon become an expired listing. You can get this basic data on MLS houses at Realtor.com. Median sales prices. The median sales price gives you a guideline of what to expect in a certain city or neighborhood. It can help you quickly spot property listings that may be way overpriced or very attractive deals. If the average 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, single-family house in an area sells for around $350,000, and anything comes on the market for $250,000 or less, that may be an immediate buying signal. Local realtor associations regularly publish these statistics on their websites. Foreclosure rates. Foreclosure rates signal market health and the direction the market is going. High and rising foreclosure rates can signal a lack of ability to pay for homes and potential for declining prices. The opposite is true, too. RealtyTrack and CoreLogic frequently track foreclosure rates and activity. Subscribing to additional services that track mortgage loan delinquencies can give you a heads up even before those numbers are reported in foreclosure rates. Rents. Rent trends can tell you a lot about a market. How much rents are and which way they are headed will tell you a lot about who lives there, the returns on local investment properties, and the strength of the market. You can get a quick feel for this by surfing Craigslist ads and calling on local for rent signs. Just make sure you also find out real rented rates, not just what landlords are asking. These can be very different numbers. Concessions and creative financing. One of the biggest tells of who is in control of the market, buyers or sellers, is what concessions are being offered or creative financing is being entertained. If rental apartment complexes are advertising a free month of rent and no deposit, sellers are offering to pay buyers' closing costs or do rent-to-own deals, then it is probably a buyer's market with good room to negotiate discounts. Consumer sentiment. Data and statistics are good. However, it is also important to get a real feel for what's happening locally. How do locals feel about the market? Are they talking about recent home purchases and investments at the coffee shop and gym? Or are they complaining about the market and worrying about how they are going to pay the bills? If you can't get there, you may find some of this information in online forums. Bottom line, you want to have your finger on the pulse of the local market, but whatever you do, do not get caught up in paralysis of analysis. Even if you do not know everything about a market, it's okay, as long as you are always buying cheap enough. Remember, there is a buyer for every house at the right price. So don't let any lack of the market prevent you from day trading houses in a specific market. Do the research, analyze some markets, pick one, and run with it. You have all the information here that you need. Pick one and don't look back.